Thank you, Alex. And thank you very much for being here and for inviting me to give a talk. It's been very nice to finally visit Perimeter. And so today we're talking about something along the same lines of what Alex was talking about with Mark and Chris, but it will be a different work that I've done with my former advisor, Brian Swingle, and a postdoc at Brandeis University, Martin Sacieta. And this will be about cosmology of random entanglement. So, Alex, let me know that the audience is a little broad. There is some more QI-oriented people, so I want to start by giving a broad overview of the motivations and the reasons why we're interested in studying these kind of models. And also, we'll introduce a couple of the tools that we will use. Of course, I won't have time to make a full review of the SFT, but we can do some. I can introduce some of the tools that we will use in this specific work, and then I'll be describing our bulk setup, our dual boundary theory, and then some of the properties of how this bulk setup is encoded into the dual boundary theory, which is one of the most interesting things of this work. Feel free to interrupt me at any point with questions, clarifications, or anything. Okay, so first of all, the first hint that gravity is a holographic theory was given by Bagasin and then Hawking with the observation that the entropy of black holes is proportional to the area of its horizon. Now, this is a pretty interesting feature for a physical system because generally, we think of a physical system as having a number of degrees of freedom that scales with the volume, not with the area. It is true for some systems, but in gravity it seems to be very frequently true that the number of degrees of freedom scales with the area. And this line of reasoning led to the AdS/CFT correspondence a few decades later by Maldacena that showed that there is, if you have a quantum gravity theory, and this quantum gravity theory lives in an asymptotically anti-de-Sitter spacetime, then there is a dual theory, meaning a theory which is completely equivalent, which is a conformal field theory with one dimension less and without gravity that lives on the asymptotic boundary of this AdS spacetime. Now, one way to state this correspondence very formally is to say that the partition functions with sources are done, or in other words, the generating functionals of these two theories are equal to each other. And so, of course, once you have a generating functional, you can derive all correlation functions and observables by derivation. Now, one thing that is very important to keep in mind is that on the CFT side, we have a well-defined quantum field theory. We can define a Euclidean path integral for it and compute this partition function exactly. But on the gravity side, we really don't know how to do that. We don't know how to do a non-perturbative quantum gravity Euclidean path integral. So what we generally do in AdS/CFT is to evaluate, at least in most cases, to evaluate this Euclidean path integral in the saddle point approximation. And this means essentially solving Einstein's equations in Euclidean signature and finding all the solutions that we can find, compare the actions of these solutions on shell, and figure out which one is the lowest action, and that will dominate your Euclidean path integral and will give you a good approximation to the partition function of quantum gravity, which should be equal to the CFT. So in this sense, you should think, and I will talk a little bit more about this in a second, but you should think of a Euclidean geometry as being, in some sense, equivalent to a Euclidean path integral of a CFT. And so it's really how you evaluate this partition function is by finding Euclidean geometries. And then on top of the Euclidean geometries, you can consider quantum fields and perform some Euclidean path integral for quantum fields on this background. Okay, so AdS/CFT is a very nice theory in the sense that it taught us many things about quantum gravity, and especially the relationship between quantum information observables in the dual theory and gravitational geometric observables in the bulk theory. And this is a very interesting set of results. However, I would say that there is still a big open gap in the AdS/CFT literature, which is that any quantum gravity theory that really wants to describe quantum gravity in our universe must be able to account for cosmology. And the reason for that is that cosmology, we really live in a cosmological universe. We don't live in an asymptotically ADS universe, at least as far as we know. And so we would like to be able to describe a cosmological universe within the SFT. And if you can do that, you get a bunch of perks. For example, you might gain insight into what it means to have a cosmological singularity and maybe learn something very important about quantum gravity. So there are many problems for how to describe a cosmology in a DSCFT. I want to list here the ones that I think are most obvious and intuitive. The first one is,
I have a question. Are you using cosmology as a technical term?
I'm using cosmology as consider a cosmological universe or some universe that evolves with time. It doesn't have, I was actually about to say what I mean here, but it doesn't have an asymptotic ADS boundary. And in general, maybe it's it could be a homogeneous universe. So you want to describe something like what was in our skies. So some universe that is nearly homogeneous, it expands maybe in an accelerated way, and it's not really ADS. So the difficulties with this story are that, well, first of all, the SFT describes quantum gravity with a negative cosmological constant. That's what anti-Isidore spacetime is. But our universe, at least in the simplest models, describes a universe which seems to have a positive cosmological constant and a current accelerated expansion. That is not necessarily true. Chris can tell you everything about that, but the idea is that it could be that there is a negative cosmological constant, but at least in the simplest models like Lambda CDM, our current standard cosmological model, you really need a positive cosmological constant. Another point is that asymptotic ADS spacetimes are in some sense asymptotically empty, and by that I mean that if you go away far towards the asymptotic boundary, the only relevant contribution to the stress tensor comes from the cosmological constant, and there is no matter. But universes like ours are really homogeneous universes, like FRW, for example, and these universes are homogeneously filled with matter and radiation and many things. So it sounds like a very different kind of universe, and in fact, the third reason that I put here is maybe the most intuitive one, and it's really a consequence of the previous two, is that our, let's say, cosmological universes like FRW don't have an asymptotic boundary, not even if you put a negative cosmological constant in them. And this seems to be a very big issue to describe cosmology in ADS-CFT, because ADS-CFT relies on the idea of having an asymptotic boundary where to define a dual theory. So clearly, these are a set of problems that make immediately evident why it's complicated to describe cosmology in a DSCFT and why we should worry about that, because it's definitely an important central open problem in the field. So many people have been working on it. I won't try to give a review of any of these approaches. I just want to list some of them and maybe group them in three categories. I would say these first two are on the side of trying to describe universes that have different sign of the cosmological constant, so zero for celestial orography or positive for the sidereal orography. And in these cases, you really need a different holographic framework. You just can't use something like ADS-CFT. You need some new idea for how to describe it. So these are very interesting directions, but it's still unclear how to fully describe these theories. There are some more phenomenological approaches, at least one here, holographic cosmology. And in this case, the difficulty, so the idea is that you try to compute cosmological correlators and relate it to some dual QFT correlator. But in this case, it looks like you have some issues with it, like the dual theory, at least in this approach, seems to not be fully well-defined. You might have some complex parameters that you need to analytically continue depending on what kind of theory you're looking at. So it seems like it's a bit complicated to describe it also in that way. And then there are some approaches that are the ones that many people worked on, including Chris and Mark and Brian and I and Peter. And this idea is to try and simplify the problem. So suppose that I give up as a first step the having a positive cosmological constant, and maybe I try to first describe a cosmology, which is not necessarily realistic. And by cosmology, I mean a universe which is disconnected and doesn't have an asymptotic boundary. And then try to learn some general lesson, and then you can apply to describe universes more similar to ours. So what we will do, also in this case, you find generally that there are some difficulties, like encoding in a dual theory in general, like very complicated. So the kind of approach that I will talk about today is, I would say, on the last kind of, the last one of the three approaches that I mentioned before. And the idea is to, again, give away the requirement of having some realistic space-time that looks like our own universe to gain the advantage of having something simple that we understand very well in the DSFT and study some general properties, hoping to learn lessons about how cosmology in general is encoded in the DSFT. So when I say they're not realistic, I mean that they are negative lambda. They're closed and inhomogeneous universes, and they're time symmetric. So they have a big bang and then a big crunch in the future. The advantage is that we can define this cosmological state using a Euclidean path integral in the saddle point approximation. So what we generally do in a DSFT. So we can find a Euclidean saddle that gives us this cosmology. We can understand very well what's the dual description in terms of two entangled CFTs. And then, given the simplicity of the setup, we can study some properties of how the cosmology is encoded in the dual theory and see if we can learn something general about it. So yeah, this is the main goal. And right now I would like to, first of all, review two tools that we will use, and then I give a summary of the results, and then we'll delve in more detail into our construction. So the first tool is the concept that the idea that states of a given theory can be prepared using a Euclidean path integral. That this is true in quantum field theory. And in this case, you should think of the quantum field theory as living on these two lines. Maybe you can think of this as a CFT on a cylinder. You're just looking at a section of the cylinder. And if you have a Euclidean path integral that is reflection symmetric, then on the time reflection symmetric slice of this Euclidean path integral, which I depicted here by this red line, you can slice open the path integral, and there will be some given state for the quantum field theory. And this given state just depends on how long have you evolved in Euclidean time and the kind of sources that you inserted in the Euclidean past. So this state you should think as a state of the QFT, then if you have some Lorentzian Hamiltonian associated with it, you can evolve in Lorentzian time to get your time evolution. Now, in a DSFT, it's the same thing. So you could have on the boundary the CFT state defined by a Euclidean path integral. And if you want to find the corresponding Euclidean geometry, so the Euclidean saddle that I was talking about before, what you do is fix the boundary conditions here and then fill in with gravity, meaning solve Einstein's equations in Euclidean signature. And you will find some geometry. This geometry will also be reflection symmetric. And the time reflection symmetric slice of this geometry will give you a Cauchy slice for your Lorentzian evolution. So basically the initial state of quantum fields on some given slice of the geometry. And then you can just evolve a Lorentzian time and figure out what's the Lorentzian geometry associated with it. So this procedure defines a state for Boole quantum fields and a specific geometry of your Cauchy slice. And given a Cauchy slice, clearly, then you can just evolve in real time and get some Lorentzian geometry, which implies that different CFT states prepared by, say, inserting different sources in the CFT corresponds to different initial Cauchy slices and so different Lorentzian geometries in a DSFT. And this is the idea that in a DSFT, if you have a given state of the CFT that corresponds to a given geometry in the bulk. The other tool that I want to introduce is what is called a quantum extremal surface. The idea here is that suppose you have a boundary CFT and a dual spacetime. Let's start with I represented with dots here quantum fields in the bulk, but let's start without these quantum fields. And suppose that you just want to compute the entanglement entropy of some subregion of the CFT B. Then to do that, you can use the bulk dual theory and compute what is called the Ryota-Kayanagi surface, which is a surface homologous to this region B, and that extremizes the area functional. So it's basically the surface homologous to B with the lowest possible area. Now, that gives you the, you compute the area of this surface divided by 4 times the Newton's constant, you get the entanglement entropy of region B. And this is something that has been shown to be true in many, many cases and also proven from the Euclidean path integral. If you include quantum fields, the nice, the interesting feature is that you can do something similar, but what you must extremize is now a functional called generalized entropy, which is the sum of the area plus entropyable fields. And if you do that, there are cases where you can have what is called an island, an entanglement island. This was very relevant in the discussion of black hole evaporation. And the entanglement island can appear, is basically a compact part of the quantum streamlet surface that can appear because it might be that this little region here is highly entangled in the bulk with this region here. So bulk fields are entangled. And including this region might lower enough this bulk entanglement entropy term such that even if the area is increasing because you're adding this piece of quantum streamlet surface, the total functional is actually decreasing, and so this will be a dominant contribution. And so you would get some islands for island in the bulk, maybe far away from this boundary region B, and that computes the entanglement entropy of this region B. Now, why is this interesting? Because there is something in holography called entanglement wedge reconstruction that tells you that once you identify a quantum streamlet surface, then whatever is inside the quantum streamlet surface union the region B, so basically this region B, and if you have an island, also the island, everything which is in there can be reconstructed from the region B only. So even an island, even if it's maybe far away from this region B, it is somewhat surprisingly reconstructible from the dual region B. And this will be very relevant in our case because our cosmology will actually be basically an entanglement island. Okay, so let me give a, colors are not showing up very well, but let me give a quick summary of our results. So the idea is that we can build explicitly a cosmology, and this cosmology will be entangled to two auxiliary idea spacetimes. And we can study the dual, and we know that there is a dual state to this setup, which is the entangled state of two holographic CFTs that live on these boundaries of the idea spacetime. So here, this is the cosmology, these are the two idea spacetimes, and you should think of these lines as the entanglement between bulk fields. What we find is that if you have enough bulk entanglement, then this cosmology is encoded into one of these two left or right CFT, and it's encoded as an entanglement island. So just like the, if you're familiar with the story, just like the interior of the black hole at late times is encoded in the Hawking radiation. We also find that the map that encodes the cosmology into these CFTs, so this bulk to boundary map, is non-isometric, and that means that if you have two orthogonal states in the cosmology, and then you map them to two different states in the CFT, the state, if the, the states in the CFT will not be orthogonal. So the map doesn't preserve inner products. And this is another feature that arises frequently in the black hole interior. And you can also build an explicit reconstruction of operators in this cosmology in terms of operators in the boundary theory, but this is state dependent, which means you need to be aware of what state the cosmology is in order to be able to reconstruct operators. And finally, I won't have time to talk about this probably, but feel free to ask me later. There is a tensor network toy model of this story that you can study, and that shows that you have some non-isometric to nearly isometric phase transition as the bulk entanglement grows. So basically, the map, if you have enough bulk entanglement, won't preserve inner product, but for all simple states in the cosmology, it will nearly preserve inner product. Okay, so if you have any question about this introduction, please ask now, otherwise I will delve a little bit into the bulk construction. Okay, so this is our playground. This is the space-time we'll be talking about. And this geometry, on the bottom of this blue line, I depicted the Euclidean sector. So it's the Euclidean geometry, which is reflection symmetric, just half of it. This blue line is the time reflection symmetry slice that where our initial state for Lorentz evolution is defined, so the initial Cauchy slice. And then on the top, I glued the Lorentzian spacetime that you can study by evolving this initial slice in Lorentzian time. So let's start from the Euclidean geometry and try to understand what this is. So the idea is that you can take two thermal ADS spacetimes. Thermal ADS spacetimes are ADS spacetimes with some gas of particles in it at a finite temperature, and then glue them to each other along the trajectory of some shell. Now, when you want to glue two spacetimes in general relativity, what you do is adding some matter in the middle and then imposing some junction conditions. The type of matter that we choose to do that is a pressureless shell of dust, essentially. So you have only simply particles, heavy particles of matter, distributed in a spherically symmetric way. And then you can just solve your essence equations, impose junction conditions, and the junction conditions will fix the trajectory of the shell in this Euclidean geometry. So this is a well-defined solution of Einstein's equations. It will be a saddle for a Euclidean path integral.
Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Is an energy momentum tensor on the this W is constant or?
It's constant, but it has only a time component. Yeah. It's not like a brain. In a brain, you have a constant on the diagonal. In this case, you just have, it's just pressureless. So you have only the TT component of the sensor.
So is this similar somehow? Somehow reminds me of these space sense constructors, right? VJ.
Yeah. Martin was in that paper, actually. This is the same idea. But as I was about to say, you are working at beta left and beta right being very large. So what you're doing is you're taking those kind of Euclidean constructions, but going below the Hawking page transition.
Oh, I see.
So instead of having, the idea here is that there is an alternative saddle. This is one possible saddle with two thermal ADSs glued along this shell. But the alternative saddle is having two ADS Schwarzschild black holes glued along a dust shell. But if you go below the Hawking page transition, then these saddles are dominant over those. And these are the ones you're interested in for cosmology. Because in this other paper that Alex was mentioning, people studied the high temperature saddle with black holes and studied black hole microstates that way. And so if you're below the Hawking page transition, this is the dominant saddle. There is some caveat about whether there are other saddles. Gets a little technical there, so feel free to ask me after the talk about that. But in this case, what this Euclidean path integral prepares is a state on this time reflection symmetry slice. And what is this state? So we have two initial slices for two ADS spacetimes. It's just thermal ADS, so pure ADS with some thermal gas in it. And then we have another slice, which is given by taking a thermal ADS spacetime, cutting it off a large radius, and glue it to another ADS spacetime, also cut off at the same large radius, and gluing them along the trajectory of the shell. So what you get is two simple ADS spacetimes, and this thing in the middle that you should think of as each side of this slice, you should think as being the inside of a dust shell. So what happens when you evolve in Lorentzian time? Well, nothing interesting to the ADS spacetimes, they're just ADS spacetimes. But to this spacetime, you should think of being inside a dust shell. Now, gravity is attractive, so the dust shell will collapse, and it eventually will shrink to zero the size of this spacetime, and you get a cosmology of singularity in the future. And the same...
Sorry, yeah. I'm a bit confused. So where does the dust shell rocket it here?
The dust shell is on this red line. This is r equals 0. Uh-huh. And then you are cutting off ADS a large radius. And you have this dust shell. And on the other side of the dust shell, you are gluing the same thing, basically.
And why is the r equals 0 not continuous?
What do you mean?
You have a small cap.
Here? Yeah, you should think of when you consider thermal ADS spacetimes, you have a torus, right? Where the time direction is not contractible. So this is what I'm depicting here. So So this is your Euclidean time direction, and it's not contractible in the ball. OK, and so you get this cosmology. It's a cosmology in the sense that it's a disconnected universe. Doesn't have an asymptotic boundary. It has a big bang in the past and a big crunch in the future. And so it's a disconnected universe. It's not homogeneous because you have this dash shell that makes it inhomogeneous. You should keep in mind, this will be important later, that in this geometry, you have a thermal gas of particles, and in particular, the thermal gas of particles is entangled between the idea spacetimes and the cosmology. And we'll see in a second in what way it is entangled. OK, any question about this setup so far? OK, so one question I could ask is, OK, we have this Euclidean saddle, so we should be able to build a dual CFT state. And what is the dual CFT state? The dual CFT state is a state for an entangled state between two CFTs. You should think of it as something very similar to the thermophile double state. So suppose that you take a path integral preparing the thermophile double state for two CFTs, and then insert some heavy operator in the Euclidean path of the preparation of this thermophile double state. So the state that you get is something that looks like this. It's just like the thermophile double state with some operator O inserted before Euclidean time evolution. Now, what is this operator? This operator corresponds to the operator that in the dual theory inserts this shell of matter. So it must be spherically symmetric, and it must be very heavy. What I mean by very heavy, I mean that in the geometry, it back reacts very heavily on the geometry and allows to have two thermal ideas glued along this shell. So here it corresponds to having an insertion of many primaries in a spherically symmetric way. And these primaries must be of order n so that the back reaction is non-perturbative. So this is a pretty, this is called a partially entangled thermal state, or PETS. And this kind of state has been studied, and it's not particularly complicated. In our case, we have the state to be a low, it's basically like a thermophile double state at low temperature. We want this beta left and beta right to be very large. And this implies that the entanglement between the two CFTs will actually be small. It won't be order n. It would be something, would be order 1. Order 1, I mean, parametrically small in n, but it can still be quite large. So this is the dual state. And in this sense, it's a pretty nice construction because we have some cosmology of spacetime, and we know exactly what the dual is. So we could be able to actually study the encoding of the cosmology. Let me mention very quickly two things that we use in the paper. The first one is, we mostly work in an approximation, which we call large mass approximation. Basically, the dash shell is very heavy. That is convenient because if you study the equation of motion of the shell that I showed before, you find that the amount of Euclidean time elapsed by the shell becomes very small. So essentially, if you take large mass for the shell in ADS units, that corresponds to having two thermal ADS spacetimes glued along a single point, roughly. It's not exactly like that, but it's approximately like that. And this means that approximately, the bulk state will factorize between the left and right system. With left system, I mean ADS and left patch of the cosmology, and right system, I mean right patch of the cosmology and right ADS. So this means that you have, I said that you have bulk entanglement. The entanglement structure will be essentially fields in this left ADS are entangled with fields in this left cosmology, and fields in this right cosmology are entangled with fields in the right ADS. But there is no left-right entanglement. This is very useful because of this fact that also implies that you can actually do calculations and compute partition functions of bulk fields in these spacetimes. And so actually obtain some results. If you don't take this limit, the result should be qualitatively similar, but doing explicit calculations becomes very complicated. The other thing I want to mention is that this bulk entanglement you can think of as really a knob. So you can decide how much, as long as it's parametrically small in n, you can decide how much entanglement you have between ADS and cosmology. And this is because on top of these PETS, you can consider some what we call excited states. in the sense that you can insert some light operator that creates entanglement in the Euclidean past, that creates entanglement between ADS and cosmology. And this corresponds to some insertion of light operators in the CFT, possibly in a local. And these kind of states are just very similar to the ones that we saw before, but they have more entanglement between cosmology and ADS. So this is useful because in this way you can basically treat the entanglement, bulk entanglement, as a free parameter, and then just study what happens to these constructions depending on how much entanglement you have in the bulk.
So why does that? Why does adding these excitations increase the entanglement?
Why
does adding these excitations increase the entanglement?
Well, the idea is that if you insert some light operator here that you cannot treat in the geodesic approximation, then you will have, in general, some wave function spread out over all of these time reflection symmetric slices, and that will just add some entanglement. Yeah, that's right.
When you refer to cosmology, you're referring to the middle?
All of these, yes.
So in CFT, is it possible to identify which part of Hilbert space corresponds to that cosmology?
That's a very good question. It's on the next slide. As Takara was asking, the idea is the left ADS is certainly encoded in the left CFT, and the right ADS is certainly encoded in the right CFT. So one natural question to ask is, where is the cosmology encoded, which I think is your question, right? So this is not immediately clear. If you think a little bit carefully about it, probably you'll find the answer, but you can actually make this answer very explicit with a replica wormhole calculation. So what you do is, you compute the entanglement entropy of one of the two CFTs. And if you compute this entanglement entropy, that will tell you what's the entanglement wedge that we saw before of the left CFT, say. Left or right is the same because the full state is pure. So if you do this calculation, you find that using like replica wormholes is a well-defined Euclidean path integral calculation, you find that the entanglement entropy of the left CFT is given by the minimum. Maybe let's jump directly to this second equality, to the minimum between the entanglement entropy of bulk fields in the left ADS and the entanglement entropy of bulk fields in the right ADS, which is the same, this is what I wrote here, which is the same as saying left plus cosmology, because the full bulk state is pure.
Sorry,
yeah.
I'm a bit lost. What's the meaning of that assumption?
This one?
Yeah.
This means, okay, it means that you have enough bulk entanglement, which, as I said, you can tune as a free parameter, and that you have the bulk entanglement in the left system is much larger or much smaller than the bulk entanglement in the right system.
But you just said the bulk entanglement, the order is order of one?
It's order one, but you don't need this to be like, order one, I mean that it's not parametrically large in N.
Okay.
But like, in order for this exponential to be much larger than one, it's enough to have, I don't know, this 20 and this 10. Like, that's an order one number. And so under this assumption, if you don't have this assumption, what the cosmology, okay, what's everything? If you have this assumption, that's the result that you get. So what does this mean? First of all, notice that you don't have any area term in this entanglement entropy. So the quantum Schumann surface is trivial. It's the empty set. So what is this telling you? It's telling you that if you want to compute entanglement entropy of this CFT, for sure you need to include the left ADS. And then the only choice you have is whether or not you include the whole cosmology in the entanglement wedge of the left CFT. If you include it, then what you obtain is that the entanglement entropy is given by the entanglement in the right system. So this is the second case, which is the same as saying the entanglement of all bulk fields in the cosmology union left ADS. If instead you have the opposite situation, where you have much less entanglement here than you have there, then the cut will be here. The entanglement wedge of the left CFT includes only the left ADS, and the entanglement entropy is given by bulk fields, the entanglement of bulk fields in left ADS. Yeah?
Sorry, I have another question. So if we're losing this assumption, do you mean that we may have some area term?
No, if you lose this assumption, what you get is still something order one, but it's you have actually, in this case, I'm taking the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
What breaks down is this minimum. Like you have an explicit formula for this, you get something which you basically have two compete in terms of the same order, and it means essentially that CFT is not encoded in one of the two. The cosmology is not encoded in one of the two CFTs. It's only, you can think of it only as encoded in both.
Yeah, because for me, I think your this setup, because you use this decider entangled with the ADI, so there's no place for area because this entanglement plays the role of area.
Right. The point is, there could be in this setup a non-trivial quantum streamer surface with an area term, but it will be a maximal one. The point is, this entanglement is order one, so adding an area term will never be convenient.
Another new question, so what's the could be the potential extreme surface for the area term? Which area?
It would be in the cosmology.
I see.
It would be like the time reflection symmetry slice on the shell.
I see.
It would basically cut this in half. But this, you should think of this cosmology, if you're familiar with that, as a Python slunch, where you have a minimum and non-minimal surface and then a bulge in the middle.
Nice.
You had a question, Chris?
Oh, no.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So yeah, the idea of this story, what we can conclude is that the cosmology is always an island, in the sense that I explained before. It's an island either for the left CFT, if you have more entanglement in the left than you are in the right, or for the right CFT, if the opposite is true. So this seems to suggest that the encoding, whenever you have an island, like in evaporating black holes, what you find is that the encoding of the island into the dual theory is generally very complicated. The map is non-isometric, the reconstruction operator is state-dependent, so we can ask if this is true also in this case, and try to understand how this cosmology is encoded. So this is what we're going to do next. So if you have any question about this, please ask now.
Well, I have a question. So if you compute the holographic entanglement entropy for that system, what is the prescription? I mean, this W is not a brain. But
no, this is, you mean this red line, this green line?
Yeah.
No, it's not a brain.
In a more general case, if you take some subsystem in the dual CFT, and like in the case of ADSB CFT, we allow the geodesic and of the brain, right?
Right.
For this case, what is the prescription?
For this case, you can just use the normal RT prescription. Well, the FLM prescription. So it's RT, but correct. Basically, you only extremize the area term, but you include entanglement entropy of Boole fields.
Okay.
So that's what matters. So the area term is just zero, so because you're computing the whole boundary here. So what you're doing is compute the RT surface for that will be the empty surface, but then what you have is only a bulk entanglement term, so that's why you need to minimize. Mm-hmm. And to minimize the bulk entanglement term, you can either include the cosmology or not. So you have these two candidates, and you take the smaller one.
And my second question is, so could you go back one slide? So in order to determine what is the subspace corresponding to this cosmology, my naive guess is try to take some subsystem in the asymptotic boundary of the Euclidean ADS, and then try to consider its dual entanglement wedge. And people have discussed this kind of things in the Zeta holography in terms of time-like entanglement entropy.
I see. So trying to find entangled wedges for Euclidean patches.
Yeah. Mm. And then continue to the Lorentzian. And
I see. That's.
Is there any relation to what you identified?
Let me start by saying that I didn't think about that, so I don't have any particularly relevant comment on that. But what I can say is that the fact that you have this Euclidean geometry in the past, it is very important, and we'll see that to understand how, and we'll see that in the next part of the talk, to understand how this cosmology, now assume that you know it's encoded in the left or in the right, or in both, doesn't matter, then having this Euclidean past geometry, it's really important to build intuition for how the cosmology is encoded into the dual theory of whether or not the map is isometric, and exactly how you can actually build explicitly using this Euclidean path integral the operators in the dual CFT which are dual to operators in the cosmology, and you can see explicitly using the Eukaryan path theta that they're state dependent. So on that regard, yes, but I don't have any particular answer for that question. Okay, so what we want to understand now is how is this cosmology encoded in the dual CFT? And in particular, we know already how the ADS spacetimes are encoded in the dual CFTs. That's just normal ADS CFT. You can just use HKLL, just a pure ADS spacetime. So we won't worry about those. We will only worry about the cosmology. So how can we worry only about the cosmology? Please disregard these two and three lines. So I'll just focus on the one. What we want to do is consider different states in the cosmology. And by that, I mean take the same background, but change the matter content. So say that I have this cosmology with maybe a particle in it, or an electron in it, or a proton in it, or an electron and a proton in it, and so on. So it's just different possible states of the cosmology. And what we want to do is to understand how these different states in the cosmologies correspond to different states in the dual CFT. So in order to do that, in full generality, it's very complicated, but we can use some specific case where things are much more clear. These cases are where you insert particles that are heavy. And by heavy, I mean that they don't back react on the geometry, but they are heavy enough to satisfy the geodesic approximation. What is the geodesic approximation? Well, if you insert a CFT operator, which is heavy enough in the boundary, then the effect that it has on the bulk is inserting some particle that follows a geodesic. So that simplifies the analysis very much. So what we do is inserting these heavy particles, and then essentially you can trace them back to the boundary in Euclidean signature following this geodesic. And that corresponds to inserting an operator in the CFT at this point. So inserting CFT operators of this kind along, let's say, this beta divided by 4 region will create a particle, will create prepare a state for the cosmology with a particle in it. So we'll focus on this kind of states, and this will give us a way to have different states and a way to prepare different CFT states associated with it. So to spell it a little bit more clearly, have this picture in mind where you insert an operator in the CFT, and that corresponds to having some specific state with a particle in the cosmology. More explicitly, what you can do is start with some bulk reference state, so fix the state in the ADS spacetimes, fix the entanglement with the cosmology, so you don't touch that. And then, in the bulk, just take this reference state and act on it with some operators creating particles in the cosmology. So this will define some bulk state, where you have the one particle or two particles or whatever you want in the cosmology. Then, what's the dual state? The dual state can be just be written down in terms of that Euclidean preparation with an insertion in the CFT past. And this Euclidean preparation will be a time order product of the operator inserting the shell, the operator preparing the reference state, and then all the operators that you want to insert to create these states. Now, given this, you just have different states in the cosmology, the corresponding different states in the CFT, and so you can just define the cosmology, we call the cosmology to boundary map, which is a bulk to boundary map restricted to these states, to be the map that maps this bulk state to these boundary states. Is there any question about this story so far? So just define a bulk state with different particles in the cosmology and use the Euclidean path integral to define the corresponding dual CFT states.
So what exactly is that time ordering here?
Yeah, so you see here that in order to prefer the state of the CFT, you need to insert operators, right? This insertion of operators will be time order in the sense that Euclidean time order, in the sense that you first insert the shell operator, then you will have a bunch of insertions here that correspond to the particular reference state that you have, and you also have the insertion of particles. So you need to do that in the right order to get the right state. That's why it's time order. Okay. So in the bulk effective field theory, so in the cosmology, different insertions correspond to having different particles. And so that corresponds to having orthogonal states. Just think of having a state of the cosmology with just one electron in it or just one proton in it. the proton and the electron have orthogonal internal states, so these two states will be orthogonal to each other. So the Gram matrix of overlaps will be diagonal, and what you want to do to figure out if the map is isometric or not is compute the Gram matrix of overlap in the CFT and figure out if it's also diagonal. If it's diagonal, the map is isometric. If it's non-diagonal, you have a map that doesn't preserve inner products, which means that the map is non-isometric. Now, computing them directly in the CFT is complicated, but you have the Euclidean gravitational path integral that it's a good tool to compute these overlaps. So what you do is you take a ket and a bra, and you insert some operator in the CFT. You fix this way the boundary conditions, and then you fill in using the Euclidean path integral, so you find a subtle geometry connecting this bra and this ket. So if you do this for just the one overlap, something like this, what you get is that you have two geodesic which carry some different flavor, I and J, if you insert two different particles. And they must meet in order for this overlap to be non-zero, but they really have different flavors. So you cannot connect this to the geodesic, and that tells you that the overlap also in the CFT, if you just compute the overlap, is diagonal. So if I is equal to J, this will be one. Once you include normalization, if I is different from J, then you get zero, because you cannot connect this to geodesics. Now, it seems so that the map is isometric, because it looks like it's diagonal, this Gram matrix, except this is not actually the case. And the way to show that is to compute the square of the same overlap. Now, if you do this, what you get is that the square of the overlap using the Euclidean path integral will give you, if you compute it that way, will give you another contribution. I won't go into any details of how this geometry is built. Please feel free to ask me after the talk. You have now two insertions, you compute a square, so you have two insertions of I particles, two insertions of J particles, and you will have two contributions to the Euclidean path integral. One is the product of two copies of the previous one, that gives you zero. The other one is a Euclidean wormhole that looks like this. And in this Euclidean wormhole, you can actually connect these geodesics I to I and J to J. So this gives you a non-vanishing contribution that you can compute explicitly to the overlap. And that gives you this result, that the square of the overlap is e to the minus ran into entropy of Boole fields in left EDS plus ran into entropy of Boole fields in the right EDS. So this is kind of strange in the sense that you have a overlap, which is zero, and a square of an overlap, which is non-zero. This sounds pretty odd, but in gravity, this happens pretty often, because we know that gravity, at least in many cases, computes not really quantities, but average of those quantities over an ensemble of dual CFTs. This is related to what is called the factorization problem in gravity. And here, it's the same thing. The idea is that this ensemble is over microscopic states corresponding to the same macroscopic states of this dust shell. So it's not a particularly relevant point, but the idea is it's not that strange that you have a square overlap non-zero if you get an overlap being zero. So what does this basically tell you? This is some statistical statement that tells you that the typical size of off-diagonal overlaps is given by this quantity. But well, I guess by the square root of this quantity. So the result of this story is that you have a bulk effectivity theory where these states are orthogonal. But in the dual CFT, the Gram matrix is non-diagonal. And that corresponds to having some non-vanishing non-diagonal overlaps, which means that the map does not preserve the inner product, and so it's non-isometric. And you can see this explicitly using this story.
Sorry, I'm a bit confused. Mm-hmm. I think this non-vanishing overlap is caused by the averaging appearing in the gravitational calculation.
No. I'm saying that the gravitational calculation, in the gravitational calculation, you get just a Euclidean wormhole contribution.
If I try to interpret in CFT, it's kind of doing averaging.
Yeah, that's right.
So. what do you mean by the map is not asymmetric here? Do you mean the map is actually asymmetric, but after averaging that, then the map is effectively not asymmetric? Is that what you mean?
That's a very good question. The idea here is that also in the bulk effective theory should already represent your average, right? So in that case, you see that the grand matrix is actually diagonal. But after averaging over, after computing a square of the overlap in the CFT using the Euclidean path integral, you find that it's non-diagonal. So I think what it's telling you is really that the map from the bool to the boundary theory is non-isometric regardless of the averaging. Now I want to make a comment, which is maybe I have a couple of slides left. I want to make a comment, which is maybe a side comment, but I think I find it pretty interesting. And the idea is that this is something that actually Mark Van Ramsdonk initially pointed out to us, is the idea that a non-isometric map does not necessarily mean that the kernel of this map is non-trivial. In other words, whenever you hear about this non-isometric causing black hole evaporation, what people say is that you have more bulk states than boundary states, and so some of those bulk states cannot be physical. They're connected to each other by some null state. And in the black hole evaporation case, it's true because you are really looking at a macrocanonical band. In other cases, like for example this one, having a map that doesn't preserve inner product doesn't necessarily mean that there are null states. The idea is that you have a CFT which has a Hilbert space which is infinite dimensional. So if you have bulk EFT orthogonal states that are mapped to non-orthogonal states in the dual CFT, that doesn't mean that all those non-orthogonal states are actually linearly dependent. They might still be linearly independent. And one way to think about that is that any of those states can be written as some linear superposition of an infinite number of energy eigenstates. And then you could have the very high energy eigenstates with a very small coefficient that are different from each other. So for example, this way you can build two states that are non-orthogonal, but they are linearly dependent. And it could be that since you have an infinite dimensional Hilbert space, you could do this for an arbitrary large amount of states. And so in principle, you could be able to distinguish all these bulk effective theory states as long as you can probe the CFT very, very, very precisely. Now, in fact, what we did here to try and understand how this works is to truncate your CFT. So don't consider all energies, just restrict to a macrocanonical band. If you do that, then you can do an explicit resolvent calculation that shows you that the rank of the grand matrix is actually upper bounded by e to the microcanonical entropy of that microcanonical band. What does this mean? It means that if you are not able to probe the CFT to infinite precision, then there are null states. But if you are able to, and so the kernel of this map is non-trivial. But if you're able to probe it to infinite accuracy, it's possible that you are actually infinite accuracy at all energies. It's possible that you're actually able to distinguish any two of these states. And the other comment I want to make before concluding is that operators acting in the cosmology can be reconstructed from CFT operators. But in this case, you can actually build formally, explicitly a dictionary for these operators. And you see explicitly that it's state dependent. And I won't go into the details of this formula. Feel free to ask me later. But the idea is, in order to reconstruct an operator, you can use the Euclidean path integral, just like we did before. And you have a time order product. And the time order product depends on the reference state that you're working with. So clearly, the reconstruction is state dependent. Now, this is, I think, part of just a little advertisement for some work in progress, that there is a relationship between state dependence and non-isometry. Generally, most of the examples that we have, whenever there is non-isometry, there is also state dependence of operator reconstruction and vice versa. And so we're trying to prove that if you have a global bool to boundary map which is non-isometric, then there must be a region for which the reconstruction of operators is state dependent. And the opposite is also true. So if you have a region that is state dependent, then the global map must be non-isometric. And finally, we're also trying to connect this to the notion of causal connectivity in the bulk, in particular, trying to show that non-isometricity and state dependence imply the presence of a horizon or a disconnected spacetime. And this captures both the non-isometric codes in black holes, where the non-isometric region is behind the horizon of a black hole, and our cases where it's in a disconnected spacetime. Okay, so just let me give a quick summary. We build these cosmological states in ADS-CFT that can be studied in some detail, and you can also understand, well, what's the dual state. And then we showed that, first of all, the cosmology is encoded as an island into the dual CFT. And this seems to be the case often, or maybe always, and this is a general lesson that I think could be true, that if you have some disconnected spacetime in a DSCFT, then that must always be encoded as an island, and in particular in a very complicated way, so with a non-isometric map and a state-dependent reconstruction. So this is these are the main results. There is also a whole story about an isometricity phase transition coming from a tensor network toy model. I have some backup slides if anyone is interested. So let me leave with some open questions.
Here you're showing the matrix element for the bulk operator phi.
This is the boundary operator.
Oh, this is a boundary operator.
Yeah. What I'm saying here is that if you want to build the matrix element for a boundary operator, then you can do it by, which is equivalent to the matrix element for the bulk operator after the map. Mm-hmm. Then you can just do it by using this Euclidean path integral.
Okay. And are you assuming the bulk operator tie x is light enough so that enough back reacts can be?
In this case, not really, in the sense that, the way I wrote it, yes, because I assume that this is local. But if it's light, it's the same story, right? Like you can have some smearing in the Euclidean path, and you still need that insertion to be time ordered. So that should be valid also for
I was just
light operators.
Wondering, so in the usual, I mean, if there is no disconnected spacetime, then we can utilize the HKLL.
Right.
But here I was wondering how we can really construct.
Yeah, here you cannot use HKLL as usual, which is in Lorentzian signature. What you can do is just use the extrapolate dictionary to the Euclidean past. And then you will have some operator insertion in the Euclidean path integral. And that must be time ordered with all other operator insertions that you have. That must be time ordered with all other operator insertions, like the one that inserts the shell, the one that prepares the reference state. Of course, they need to be light operators in the sense that they don't back react. Mm. They don't need to be operators in the geodesic approximation, but whenever you talk about operator reconstruction, you need to be within a causal space, so you don't want back reaction.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so I want to conclude with some open questions. So first of all, whenever there are these non-isometric maps, it's frequently people say that if the map is highly non-isometric, then effective field theory should break down. Now, this is a statement that it's interesting, but it's, I think, not completely clear, at least to me. And in particular, in this case, it's particularly extreme, because these entropies are order one. In particular, they can be small, quite small. And so the map seems to be very non-isometric. But nonetheless, it can be very non-isometric. But nonetheless, the effective field theory, there is no, from the bulk point of view, there is no reason why it should break down in the sense that the all quantities are macroscopic. As long as you're far from the cosmological singularities, there's nothing that should really break down. So there is a breakdown of the encoding of this effective field theory into the dual theory. And it's, I think, an interesting question to understand exactly what it means for this effective field theory to break down. Does it mean that you just cannot define it? Does it mean that the weights encoded in the dual CFT breaks down, so you can have some bulk theory that doesn't really have a holographic dual? So I think that's an interesting set of questions. Another point, which is related to the previous one, is that cosmological states are orthogonal, but map to non-orthogonal states in the CFT. So it might be that they can be distinguished with simple experiment in the bulk, but not in a boundary. And this, if you can distinguish in the boundary, that's more complicated, which seems odd in the sense that bulk observer are supposed to be effectively theory observer versus some more fundamental CFT observer. So it's a very interesting question to understand in what sense really this cosmological versus, this bulk effectively theory experiment versus CFT experiments can distinguish two states. Another interesting point is that whenever there are closed universes, there is a statement that you cannot make operators gauge invariant because you cannot dress them to an asymptotic boundary. Now, in this case, we are able to build different states of this cosmology, and we should be able also to define operators to map between them. And it's an interesting question to ask precisely how you can dress these operators. I have some half-baked ideas regarding maybe using the entanglement. I think the entanglement between the cosmology and the DS must play a central role in this story. But so it could be an idea to try and use operators, to dress operators through this entanglement to the asymptotic ADS boundary. But that's an open question. And finally, what I mentioned before, I think it's very interesting to try and understand more in more detail the relationship between non-isometricity, state dependence, and causal connectivity in the bulk. I think this is definitely something that it would be nice to make more precise. So this is all I have. I'd be happy to answer questions. I'll leave you with the cosmic pets that Brian did with Midjourney. And it almost made it to the archive, actually. It was commented about an hour before the, the submission of the paper. But I think they deserved some glory. So thank you.
Other questions for Stefano? So as usual, we'll meet for lunch in the bistro. There should be a table reserved for us, so look for it. And let's thank Stefano again.
Thank you.